Hey, Leading Learning listener, if improving as a learning business professional is one of your goals for 2026, make sure to go to leadinglearning.com/summit.
The Learning Business Summit is the only event laser-focused on professionals who lead and work in market-facing businesses that serve adult learners. Across 3 days online, you'll connect with peers and experts to strengthen both your knowledge and your network.
Featuring hands-on practitioners and subject matter experts, the live education sessions are designed for participation, reflection, and, most importantly, action to boost the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business.
And because leveraging technology is essential for any learning business, the summit also includes demos of LearnTech platforms.
It all happens online January 27th, 28th, and 29th. Go to leadinglearning.com/summit to get all the details and join us for the Learning Business Summit.
Now, on with the episode.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 32 of the Leading Learning Podcast. And if you are listening, then you or others on your staff may be interested in knowing about learning technology design, or LTD for short. That is a learning experience designed specifically for professionals in the business of continuing education and professional development. It's coming up on May 18th and 19th in Arlington, Virginia, and we would love to see you there. The goal of the event is to help the people coming together for that find new and better ways to engage learners and create really lasting impact through the effective use of technology. So we encourage you to find out more about that at ltd.leadinglearning.com. We also want to thank Meridian Knowledge Solutions for being a sponsor of Leading Learning Webinars, and as a part of that sponsorship package, they are a sponsor for this podcast episode. And you can find out more about our upcoming webinars at tagoras.com/webinars, and you can find out more about Meridian at meridianks.com. And so, Jeff, in this episode, we get back to interviewing and talking with C-level folks at associations about where they see the state of learning in their organization and more broadly. So I know you had a chance to talk with the CEO of the American Association of Critical Care Nurses, Dana Woods.
That's right. Dana and I were able to catch up and talk about what's going on at AACN. They are a very strong organization. They've been a very strong organization from the standpoint of offering learning education out to their membership base. Dana is just an extremely smart person. And we talked a little bit about her background coming into the CEO role, which she's been in for a little over 2 years now. She has a fairly heavy marketing and strategy sort of background coming into the role. So we talked about how that influences how she approaches it. We talk about the value proposition, how learning fits into the value proposition for AACN. And then we talked about some of their specific learning initiatives, because they do have some really great things going on. They're in the third generation of an on-demand online learning program they offer called the Essentials of Critical Care Orientation, or ECHO. And they've been doing that for a number of years, taking it into hospitals and healthcare systems and providing the orientation for critical care nurses. I think that's really fertile ground for just about any organization to provide those types of orientations. And AACN was ahead of the curve in offering an online version of that. So we talked about, how that's come about and what the challenges and the successes have been. We do also look at their webinar offerings too, because they're doing some interesting things with webinars. And I think a lot of people think, webinars are just kind of ho-hum and boring. But AACN took a hard look at theirs. They've trimmed them down, made them shorter. They've really focused on the design of them and working with the subject matter experts. And they've had some tremendous success with their webinars. In fact, I often hold them up as a model for organizations to look at. So we talk about that a little bit. We talk about Dana's own learning habits. She is an avid learner. And just in general, I think this is just some great perspective from the leader of a very strong organization about learning, education, and the role that membership organizations can play.
Wonderful. I look forward to hearing what Dana has to say.
Hey there, this is Jeff Cobb, and I am joined today by Dana Woods, who is the CEO of the American Association of Critical Care Nurses, or AACN. Dana, welcome to the podcast, and maybe we can start off with you telling us a little bit about AACN and what it does.
Absolutely. I'm happy to. The American Association of Critical Care Nurses is a community of now 108,000 nurses who care for acutely and critically ill patients and their families at what is most often the most difficult time in their lives, as you can imagine. So our nurses are part of this community because they are driven to acquire or enhance their expert knowledge and the influence they need to fulfill their promise to these patients and their families. It's a very high-stakes job, and as you can imagine, our members are eager to do it exceptionally well.
Mm. Yeah, and I know, and I obviously one of the main things we want to dig into here is how you help them with that. But I'd love to get a little bit more background on you, though, before we do that. Now, you've been CEO of AACN for a little over 2 years, I believe, but you were with the organization for really quite a while before that. And if I understand correctly, you know, had significant marketing and communications roles within the organization. And then you've also, even before you got there, you had a marketing and PR background. You got an MBA at some point along the way. So, you know, I'd be interested in, you know, as a CEO now, how does that kind of marketing, communications, PR type background, the MBA background, how do those inform how you approach being an association CEO?
Oh, that's a lot to take in. I think
just take a deep breath and do your best.
I will. I think in my experience, we'll start with the MBA being sort of a broad degree and field of study that includes things like marketing and communications and organizational strategy, which most recently had been my role before taking on the CEO role. And as I think about marketing, we'll start there. I've always been one of those who subscribes to the broadest definition of marketing. I believe it was Philip Kotler's version of it. It's so simple, but so hard. It's simply identifying societal needs and meeting them. And I think, you know, I've thrived in organizations that understand that marketing is not a department or solely a department, that it's everyone's job in an organization to identify and meet those needs that individuals have. And particularly in the association arena, you know, that's really why we exist. People affiliate to get what they need from others like them. And so, you know, listening to me is a huge part of marketing and strategy development. And in the case of associations, I think learning how to engage members more effectively is really a deeply held way of being for me as a leader in all the roles I've held here, but especially in this one. And fortunately, I work with about 160 colleagues who feel the same way, that the work we do is done with nurses and for nurses, which gives us a real advantage to understanding their needs and filling them.
Right, right. So, I mean, it sounds like for you, I mean, marketing and probably what most people would think of as strategy are not terribly separate. I mean, those really go kind of hand in hand. Would that be an accurate way to put it?
That's how I've always felt. And I think in most organizations, fortunately, I've worked with folks who felt the same way. Where I didn't, maybe I wasn't the most popular marketing leader.
So sometimes it's good to not be popular as a marketing leader if you want to actually make some change happen. Well, then, you know, I know then thinking as a marketer, thinking as a strategist, you know, which I know you are as well, those going hand in hand. I know, you know, you probably think intensely about the value proposition of AACN. And, you know, obviously you do a lot of things as an association. Most associations do. So lots of ways that you're providing value to serve your members. From your perspective, how do learning and education fit into the organization's value proposition? And, you know, maybe as a follow-on, how has that evolved over time?
Mm-hmm. Well, it might be helpful to understand, you know, this organization was founded in 1969 by just a handful of nurses who found themselves in this brand new environment called an ICU. They didn't exist before that. And so they were driven by this need to understand more about the changing therapies, technologies, pharmacology, so that they could help their patients. And, you know, they were driven by some fear of hurting their patients. A lot of this stuff was really unproven. So developing some sort of evidence base was, I think, a key driver for the organization. It might not have been called that back then, but education and learning really are the foundation of why we exist. And when we survey our members, which is pretty regularly, and ask them, you know, what drives them to be part of this association, always, as long as I've been here, 16 years, the number one answer is around keeping up to date with their practice, because it is so dynamic. As you know, the healthcare environment is dynamic, therapies change, drugs change, the patients are presenting much more acutely ill than they did years ago. So keeping up to date is vital to keeping your patients safe, which is what nurses are driven by. So I think when I think about how the value proposition may have evolved over time, back in the early days, we were pretty focused on clinical mastery. You know, what does it take to do this procedure? How do you take care of a patient on a ventilator? The real sort of technical side of the profession. What I have seen change, particularly in the last maybe decade for us, is moving from just that clinical focus to putting it in context of the whole system in which nurses have to practice, and being much more human-centered, not just from the patient standpoint, which is what nurses are so excellent at doing, but also human-centered from the nurse's standpoint, to thrive in environments where nurses' practice can be very challenging, as you can imagine. These are very, very sick patients. Their families are scared, don't necessarily know what's going to happen, and it's an incredibly, I think, sophisticated skill set that nurses have to possess. And I think by putting that technical mastery, there's learning resources out there for technical mastery, but also the community in which you can get support for and understand how to take better care of yourself and the psyche of your patients and families, as well as their physical symptoms, has helped us to remain relevant.
Right, and I know, you know, having worked with a number of nursing organizations, nurses in general do seem to be so dedicated to the idea of continually improving. And as you said, I mean, particularly in the setting your nurses are working in, being able to do that is so critical. And I know that, you know, one of the avenues that you chose for supporting nurses was to get into online learning and providing, you know, basically learning that can be accessed in the context of work. I know you just recently launched the third generation of your Essentials of Critical Care Orientation, or ECHO, as I believe the organization calls it. You know, you got into that, I'm not even sure how many years ago it was. Maybe you can tell us, but before, you know, a lot of organizations were thinking about it, you invested significantly in building an on-demand online educational product and then, you know, taking that into institutions, taking that into the healthcare environment so the nurses would be able to access it. So I know I believe you were around at the time. So, you know, how did you decide so early on that, you know, that was the right path to take, that was an appropriate risk to take, because you did invest significantly in it. And then, you know, what have been some of the challenges along the way?
Sure. I'm happy to talk about that. While ECHO, or the Essentials of Critical Care Orientation, was launched as an e-learning platform in 2003, we had been in the business of providing orientation to critical care nurses who are new to that specialty. We've been doing that since the beginning of time, pretty much. And the former form for that orientation, I think it's just kind of funny to look back at it now. When I came on board, it was, I believe, maybe 2 6-inch, 3-ring binders full of transparency overheads.
Wow.
So to help nurse educators in the hospitals, primarily educate the new crop of critical care nurses. And, you know, naturally, platforms changed, technology changed, and we knew we had to change with it. Now, fortunately, the paper product, you know, the old school product did very well. It became you know, absolutely essential to nurse educators who are trying to bring new nurses up to speed. So we were pretty confident that the content would remain relevant. It was the learning around the platform and the delivery that perhaps was challenging. I mean, as you know, it was certainly costly, so that there was a risk in investing. You know, at the time, it was about $1 million to create the first Echo for us in a nonprofit. That seemed like a lot of money at the time. Looking at what it costs to develop Echo these days, that was actually pretty cheap. So, but back in the day, it seemed like a lot. I think the real learnings for us, I wouldn't even call them challenges because the product was pretty instantly successful, but we really had to learn a lot about things like contracting with hospitals at an institutional level rather than just delivering a product in the mail for site licenses and other the other implications of an e-learning program. We also had to develop an ability to direct sell, which was not a capability we had at the time, and then began distributing through some of the major learning management systems. So distribution partnerships were new to us as well. And all of that, you know, certainly added complexity to a program development process that was already complex going from paper to electronic. So it definitely was sort of, I think of it as our Skunk Works days. We had a team that was really just focused on that, who was learning every day and discovering a new twist in the road and doing everything we could to understand that and get around it successfully.
And you have been quite successful with it. I mean, this is something that's used by a large number of nurses, a large number of institutions. You've seen it grow quite a bit over time. Is that correct?
Right. Well, currently, we've got over 1,100 hospitals using Echo for their orientation, and that's out of about roughly 5,000 who have critical care units in the U.S.
Wow, so that's pretty good penetration into the market, the audience that you're serving. What are some of the other learning initiatives? I know Echo has been kind of a flagship in many ways, but it's only, you know, one of the ways that you're offering education and learning out to your audience. What are some of the ones that you know that you like to highlight that you think are particularly valuable?
Oh, you know, our reason for being, as I said, is providing learning resources. I think some of the newer, well, let me balance. There's some new things, relatively new things that we've been doing that are very exciting and look to be very relevant. And then an old tried and true thing that is really doing well, which is our conference. But let me start with some of the newer things. A couple years ago, we started a webinar series, and I know webinars in and of themselves are not new. Ours, we went out into the market with a couple of distinctions, one being that they would be 30 minutes max. They'd be very focused on emerging clinical topics or environmental topics for our nurses. So they would be, we'd have the ability to be very nimble to bring topics to the fore, like when Ebola was showing itself in the U.S., webinars allow us to be much more nimble in churning out content. And the other distinction we made is the board made a deliberate decision not to charge for our webinars, even though that was part of the original business plan, feeling that particularly these evidence-based practice, these vital, vital pieces of knowledge that every nurse needs, that it should be available to every nurse with no barriers. So you don't even have to be a member to access our webinars free of charge. And we have had an incredible response to those. On average, 2,000 viewers per webinar. And what is, I think, most satisfying for us is our intent was that nurses would watch these together, if at all possible, discuss what they're learning, and actually change practice where they needed to. And our customer research is telling us that we're doing a really nice job of that. About 88% say that they're discussing the topics with their colleagues. 77% are sharing them, the new practices with unit leadership with the intent of changing policy or practice. And half within a month of the webinar have reported that they have implemented the practice change. So to us, that's kind of that was a big unknown in the past. You'd put out education and hope that it was easily applicable, and this has given us some insight that that we're on the right track. You go ahead.
I was going to say that. I mean, that is great. You focused, I think, on making those into a high impact product in the first place. And I've recommended to a number of organizations to take a look at what you're doing with webinars, because I think, webinars come in for a lot of flack these days, I think, but if you do them really well, you know, they can be extremely effective. And I think they have been in your case. And obviously you've been able to measure that they are in fact effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're pretty excited about it. And another program that is old school face-to-face, we've got kind of the old model of that, which would be our annual conference. We call it the National Teaching Institute and Critical Care Exposition. It usually attracts 6,000 to 8,000 nurses each year. And actually, it was you, Jeff, I think the research that you did with ASAE helped us to feel more comfortable that conferences will not go away. There is still a strong desire for professionals to meet face-to-face for certain learning needs. And we're certainly seeing that it's alive and well. Our attendance for our projected attendance for next month is significantly higher than we anticipated in our budget. So that's been the last 3 years running, we've seen that. So it's wonderful to know that being with one another live is still got great value, at least for our nurses.
Right. Right. And with something like the conference, or any of your other learning initiatives, I mean, you mentioned with the webinars that you've done some follow up. You have a sense of the impact that they're having. I mean, how much do you know about the impact of your conference or the other types of learning and education you're offering? You know, how do you get a sense that as an organization you really are impacting both individual nurses but also the field that you're serving?
Well, if we were having this conversation a few years ago, I wouldn't have as good an answer as I do now. I think we've made some significant changes in how we evaluate and measure the impact of our offerings. And, one view that I look at is by activity. So whether it's the conference or let's say someone's accessed continuing education module online, are the questions that we're going to ask them as part of their CE evaluation are very different. They've moved from just standard satisfaction with the content or the speaker to what you're describing as impact. So our standard evaluation at this point does ask folks to rate their knowledge before completing the activity and after. We also ask them to rate their level of confidence in applying the concepts presented before and after. And also ask them to talk about their level of confidence in leading improvements based on what they're learning. We not only do that immediately after the learning activity, but we circle back 6 months later and see where they're sitting at that point. So we actually have some really good data now, program by program, to look at the impact. And just as an example of that, for our annual conference, I asked our folks how we did last year, and in terms of sharing learning, 92% of conference attendees say they went back and shared the learning with their colleagues.
Wow, 90%
said they applied it. So that's great information to have. And I think on a more aggregated level, like so many organizations, we do an annual sort of a strategic market research study that gives us a sense into satisfaction and loyalty. And those are much more global measures of how well is the association preparing and inspiring you for changes in practice that needs to be made. How do our information and resources and tools prepare you to provide the best patient care possible? So that gives us sort of a way to track and trend how we're doing holistically with all of our offerings.
Well, I think it's it's a great example to other organizations that you're doing as much as you are to measure that you are in fact having an impact, and then factoring that back into the planning that you do. I know as an association CEO that you no doubt end up talking with, networking with other association CEOs, and really in many ways I would describe you as ahead of the curve as an organization in terms of, you know, getting into e-learning early, thinking about how you're going to measure impact, and I think just really being thoughtful about how you grow and develop learning as part of your value proposition. I'm betting that, you know, other CEOs that you bump into kind of know this about AACN and probably ask you for advice as to, you know, what they might do with their own education programming, what they might do with their own learning. I mean, what pearls of advice you know, might you offer out to an organization that maybe isn't quite as far along as AACN is right now?
Mm-hmm. Oh, good question. Well, thank you for the compliment. I do think that the organization, which is to me all 100,000 plus of us, are doing a good job supporting nurses in their delivery of patient care. And so what would I offer as advice? You know, I think for us specifically where nursing is concerned, which is clearly our area of focus and expertise, there's really no substitute in my mind for talking to nurses every chance I get. So whether your association is focused on accountants or engineers or physicians, you know, I think that's so vital. And we have, I think, sort of a built-in advantage in that most of our boards are made up of those we serve, which gives us a regular exposure to what's going on in the environment, how that's impacting the practice of nurses and their needs. But I feel like we do, we go way beyond that. Every volunteer interaction we have with a nurse, and all of our resources are co-created with expert nurses in our community. We're also asking them, what is going on in the environment? What do you need? What do you aspire to? What do you need to be able to do that's different today than yesterday? And incorporating that in not just our new offerings, but as we look at what we've done forever, how will they be received in the current environment, which is so different than it was 10 years ago? So I think we've gotten very good as an organization at understanding that this isn't just about creating features in a product and promoting those features, but it's really about understanding what does a nurse need to be able to do and how will this resource or program or product help them do that. Really coming from a place of nurse as individual versus nurse as customer number. And I think that speaks volumes to why we've been pretty successful.
Right. No, I always gotten a sense of AACN as being very, very in touch with its market, and as a result, you know, being in a position to lead the way for the nurses that you're serving. As we're starting to wrap up, though, I want to be sure to ask, because this is something we like to ask everybody who comes on to the Leading Learning podcast. What about your own learning? What are some of your own, you know, lifelong learning habits that helps to, you know, keep you on top of your game and ahead of the curve?
Well, I certainly in the past I've been a big fan of formal education and have benefited greatly from that. I think the more applicable it could be, the better. My, you know, you mentioned me getting my MBA, and I did that while I was employed here. So being able to apply what I was learning immediately to the real world and real projects was a much more fulfilling and I think successful learning experience for me than, say, undergraduate college. But in terms of the here and now, in my current role, like most of us, I don't have nearly as much time as I used to do the kind of really slow book learning that I would prefer. So I still do read a lot. And I can't remember the last time I read fiction, because there's just so much to read about effective organizational leadership. And, you know, I love the folks that most everyone does, Jim Collins, Kevin Cashman, Sinek, you know. I think the real revolution that I've seen that has helped me in my learning is being able to access things like TED Talks in shorter snippets. You're still getting access to these incredible minds. But rather than taking a week to read a book, 17 minutes, it can really give you a lot to think about. So between that and, you know, Harvard Business Review, anything that is going to give you sort of a concentrated essence of some really great ideas that you can then translate for your organization, that I think works best for me.
Well, I certainly, I think I follow some of the same learning practices, and those are some great both practices and resources that you mentioned there. So, as we're wrapping up, first of all, thanks for having this conversation. Doing this podcast is always one of my biggest learning opportunities, and this has certainly been an example of that. How can folks who are listening find out more about AACN and what you're up to, and for that matter, how can they connect with you?
Well, as far as AACN, just AACN.org will get you to our website. And connecting with me, feel free, dana.woods@aacn.org. I'd be happy to share what I know and learn from you as well.
Well, great. Well, Dana, thanks so much for taking the time to talk.
Well, thanks so much, Jeff.
So that wraps up our interview with Dana Woods of AACN. Just a couple quick reminders. Again, LTD, Learning Technology Design, is coming up May 18th and 19th in Arlington, Virginia. We really encourage you to take a look at that great program. We're really excited about that. That's available at ltd.leadinglearning.com. And thanks again to Meridian Knowledge Solutions. You can find out more about them at meridianks.com.
To get show notes for this episode, just go to leadinglearning.com/episode32. And while you're there, you'll see the options for subscribing to the podcast. We truly hope you will do that. If you have not already, there are a variety of ways to get it and make sure that it lands on your smartphone or other device on a weekly basis.
We would be grateful if you'd take a minute to give us a rating on iTunes. You can do that by going to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. And we really do appreciate it. It makes it much easier for others who are interested in this type of learning and leading questions, helps them find the podcast.
And finally, we hope you'll consider telling others about the podcast. You can just send out a tweet by going to leadinglearning.com/share, and that will automatically create a tweet that all you have to do is then hit the tweet button and it'll go out to the world. Or you can take that language or language of your own and put it into another social network of your choice. But please do share the word about the Leading Learning Podcast.
Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.